I'm speaking with Bill Kartalopoulos. He has an impressive resume in the comics. I mean, he's done everything, you name it. He's the programming coordinator for the Small Press Expo, the programming director for the Mocha Arts Festival, co-founder of the Brooklyn Comics and Graphics Festival. He teaches at Parsons. He's a contributing editor at Print Magazine. And now he's the new series editor for Best American Comics, which is what brings us to this interview. And I had as my first question for you, Bill, share with us a little of your journey in comics that led to you becoming the new series editor. And I want to add to that that I just watched a panel discussion you did at SBX in 2012 entitled Life After Alternative Comics, and I was hoping maybe we could frame things around that a bit and play around with the whole idea of alternative comics. Maybe if we can jump in with if you could just give us a little window into how you came about becoming the new series editor. We'll start there.
Sure. I'm not sure that there's a wonderful narrative to describe about that, other really than to kind of recapitulate some of the stuff you're already saying. To put it another way, I guess, the series editor position for all these Best American titles, and there are several of them now, Best American Short Stories, Best American Essays, and so on, that's a multi-year position. There's typically a series editor who works on each of these titles for several years, working each year with a special guest editor. So for Best American Comics, the first series editor for the first couple volumes was Anne Elizabeth Moore, and then for the next six volumes, Matt Madden and Jessica Abel, two cartoonists who I'm sure you're familiar with, who are also partners, were the co-series editors. And a couple of years ago, they accepted a multiple-year artist's residency in France. So they relinquished the position, and I was invited to go into Houghton Mifflin Harcourt and interview for the position, and I was very excited to be invited to do that, and even more excited when they notified me that they would be hiring me to do this. I think the real answer to the question, though, is just that I've done a lot of work in comics over the last several years that I think prepared me as much as it's possible to be prepared for this really big job of trying to look at as many good comics each year as possible and help the guest editor select the best work for each year's volume.
Well, I really appreciated your introduction and Scott McCloud, the guest editor, and as he puts it in so many words, you can't cover everything. You're kidding yourself if I can put everything in one book. And so he's very humble about it, and I think between the two of you, you give us a magnificent 2014 edition. I think it takes at least two people. I mean, in your role, you suggest, you create a pile, and then it becomes smaller, and then you hand it off to Scott. Could you give us a window into the selection process? Say a book comes in by a total unknown called The Owl. What happens to that book, for instance? Do you pick it up within the next few days and then maybe put it into a pile and then so on? Or
I guess. It's that's more or less it, but the level of activity kind of waxes and wanes over the course of the year. Just to back up a little bit, for all of these Best American titles, it's kind of a uniform process. There are a couple that function a little differently, but for Best American Comics, we have a public mailing address that anyone can submit work to, and we receive work all year round. Obviously, we get a lot more work close to the end of any given submissions period. So I receive the material as it's submitted. It sometimes accumulates very quickly. And just periodically, I'll go through a lot of reading sessions, sometimes more casually, sometimes more intensely. And my job at the end of the day is to essentially look at everything that I possibly can, including submissions, some material that I find on my own, and boil it down to a pre-selection of about 80 to 120 pieces that I then forward to the guest editor, whoever that may be in any given year. This year it's Scott McLeod. And then the guest editor makes the final choices, choosing from the material I've selected, but also with the latitude to bring in some pieces on their own also. You know, certainly Scott is someone who's aware of tons of comics and doesn't necessarily need me to tell him about a lot of work that's out there. And he, like any guest editor, does have the latitude to bring in a few pieces that they may have discovered on their own, which is great because it brings their perspective more strongly into play, and they may have found things on their own that I didn't discover myself. Excuse me. So that's kind of the selection process. I also do a lot to try and learn about material that maybe isn't automatically being sent in, because there are a lot of people producing work who don't necessarily automatically submit the material to Best American Comics, but I spend a lot of time on the internet looking around, trying to find new work that I should know about, and reaching out to people, asking them to submit their stuff. I go to comic book festivals like Mocha and SPX that I work on, but I've also gone to TCAS, CAKE in Chicago, and some others, and I've received a lot of submissions at comics festivals, which is helpful because you can get a lot of material at once. And I go to comic book stores too. I have a small budget so that I can just pick up stuff on my own if it looks interesting and hasn't shown up through the normal submissions process. So you know, in the theoretical case of something like the Imaginary Owl comic, you know, if it comes to me in the mail, it'll go into a big box along with all of the other material that I've received, and sooner or later I'll read it. I definitely will read it. I read everything that comes my way, and if it's something that seems like it's of outstanding quality that should be considered for the book, I'll include it in one of the several boxes of comics that I ship off to the guest editor over a period of several months. And if the guest editor likes it, there's no reason why it might not end up in the Best American Comics, even if it's previously unknown or rather obscure work. There's a fair amount of self-published material in the Best American Comics 2014. There's work by authors that I hadn't heard about before that was submitted to me. So it really is a level playing field. Anyone really can get their work into the book if it strikes us as being of outstanding quality.
Well, I'll go ahead and jump into the to my big question, which is really an umbrella for a whole lot of other questions. Like, I'm trying to get a sense of who the audience is for the book. I mean, it's kind of a, like, we know who the audience is, you and I, but for all the readers out there, to give them a sense of who the readership is, and then talk about bookstores versus comic book shops. So I come back to your panel discussion, which you had a stellar roster of talent, the big guys, Daniel Klaus, Gilbert and Jaime Hernandez, Adrian Tomine. And the title of it was a provocative, Life After Alternative Comics. It's provocative to me, maybe not to everyone, but it's because I tend to really like the term alternative comics. I think it still has currency, but maybe you would disagree. The upshot of the panel discussion was we're talking about alternative comics. It's a distinct time and place, 80s and 90s. That era's gone, of course. Cartoonists no longer receive their fan mail in an appeal box, for instance, like they all used to. And it's sandwiched in between the underground comics of the 60s, 70s, and then, as you were articulating, the rise of the graphic novel, a whole new way of presenting comics, and the rise of the internet, of course, and bookstores becoming the prevailing place, maybe, for comic book readership. Although that's where I would maybe argue, playfully argue with you, that why isn't the Best American Comics in comic book shops? Is it just a strategic decision that that's not really where it needs to be? I'll let you just jump in after speaking for so much.
Sure, sure. Well, I mean, there are a few ways to approach all the issues you've just articulated. Just to start with the last thing that you said, I sure hope Best American Comics does appear in comic book stores. I think it depends very much on the comic book store. I'm fortunate enough to live in New York, and we've got a real variety of different comic book stores here, and some of them are more oriented towards superhero comics or a mix of comics and merchandise like toys and games and things like that.
Sure.
Some of them are more strictly about comics and have a lot of graphic novels. Some of them are a little more oriented towards underground or alternative kinds of material. I think it's probably different in every comic book store, the mix there. You know, there are some that are really just oriented towards superheroes and pop culture merchandise and things like that, and maybe don't carry the book. I would hope the comic book stores that have good graphic novel sections would carry the book. As far as I know, it's available through Diamond. But certainly I think the readership for this book is broad, difficult for me to define. I think it's largely intended for a general audience beyond people who are really obsessed with comics, because I think if someone follows comics very closely all year round, while there may be, and I hope there will always be some surprises in Best American Comics, obviously someone who follows comics really closely is bound to be relatively familiar with a lot of the material in the book, if not all of the material in the book. Whereas a general audience, I think, is more likely to have an opportunity to discover work through Best American Comics. I don't know if that fully answers your question.
Yeah.
I think there are a lot of different overlapping audiences for Best American Comics that might be characterized differently. But I do think that it's a book with a large print run that travels pretty widely. I get the feeling that the book has very strong library presence, which I think is important. It's a resource for people who maybe don't even have a relationship with a comic book store that they go to regularly, but might want to go to a library and find a good starting point to discover a lot of new material, or, you know, might want to just pick up one volume in a bookstore that can be a window into the world of comics. I think my perspective is very different because I'm someone who's really involved with comics. I've always been interested in the book before I started working on it, but for me it was always more a specialist interest, in the sense that I was always curious to see what choices a given guest editor might make in a given year. But that's a very different kind of perspective from someone who maybe only knows about a handful of the most well-known graphic novels and might be looking at a book like this to learn about new things. As far as the whole life after alternative comics question goes, that title was intended to be a little provocative, I guess. Also was meant, as you said, to refer more specifically to a particular period of North American comics.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think alternative comics have gone away. I just tend to now associate that term with a particular era, in much the same way that I associate underground comics with a particular era as a term. And I was trying to speak very specifically to those artists about, first of all, the experience of producing personal expressive work during that time, before there was a lot of broad public awareness of their comics, and also contrasting that a little bit with the situation that those authors find themselves in now, in which their books are regularly reviewed in mainstream publications and appear pretty reliably in many bookstores and so on. I think there are still alternative comics, but the situation now is very different. I'm involved a lot with comics festivals devoted to small press and independent comics, and I think there's a whole new alternative comic scene. I just don't know if I would call it that or if people really identify with that term anymore. But there are a lot of people making really great and diverse comics who don't have access to bookstore distribution, or at least very good bookstore distribution, sometimes because they're not working in bookstore-friendly formats, sometimes simply because they're just very small and aren't therefore seen as attractive to the kinds of distributors that serve bookstores, and maybe sometimes because they're producing a certain kind of work that doesn't fit into the image of the graphic novel that's more acceptable maybe to bookstore buyers or reviewers who maybe have a more who have a conception of the graphic novel that's maybe more rooted in literary fiction or a literary concept of the memoir or something like that. I think there's a lot of work that has kind of gone back underground or formed a new kind of alternative. A lot of those people are selling their work directly to readers online or just posting it online and not selling it, or in many cases going to these various small press comics festivals like SPX or Mocha or Cape or CF or Short Run in Seattle. There's a number of them now. Like I said before, I think one of the great things about Best American Comics is that it is a level playing field, and certainly my sense of the comics landscape encompasses all these things. It encompasses the books by well-known authors from big publishers. It encompasses web comics. It encompasses self-published, handmade comics, and everything in between. I think one of the great things about Best American Comics is that it can be a real direct channel between the entire comics scene construed broadly and a general reader, because it does have that wide distribution in bookstores and libraries while maintaining a very free and open editorial policy.
I was thinking a little bit earlier as you were expressing yourself quite articulately, I was thinking, well, yeah, the Best American Comics is totally in the spirit of the original, what was it, Best American Short Stories, where the creative writing students, the writing community is aware of these writers, but the general public, it might be a new discovery for them, a treat to see all these writers that they might not be aware of. For me, who I'm familiar with a lot of the stuff in the book, it's great to have it collected, and there's stuff that maybe I meant to get around to looking at, or I thought about, or I heard about it, and here it is, convenient to look at. It's nice to see, for instance, Sam Alden, his second time, I think it's just his second time in Best American for Hawaii 1997.
Yeah, that's right. He was in the 2013 book as well.
And I think this might be the first time that there's been a real reach out to web comics with Depression Part 2 by Ali Brosh.
There's definitely been some stuff that's appeared online, that's initially appeared online in Best American Comics before. I know Kate Beaton's been in there maybe a couple of times now.
Oh, right.
But I do think it's a more substantial presence in this volume, not necessarily by design, but I just think that field has grown so exponentially over the past few years that it's just inevitable that more and more you're going to see work in Best American Comics that has initially appeared online and has maybe only appeared online. I think one of the differences with the Ali Brosh piece is that even though, you know, in the past year, that work has also become a print phenomenon. Her book, Hyperbole and a Half, was a very successful and popular book. Mm-hmm. But I think one of the big differences between the Ali Brosh material and some of the other stuff that's appeared online and been in Best American Comics is that really feels like work that comes from a cult culture of the internet, it's best suited towards the kinds of platforms that exist on the internet. It really seems like work that was produced specifically to be posted online without any real immediate thought about how it might one day be reformatted for a book format or something like that. Like, everything about the format is geared towards an online reading experience. In a way, we kind of benefited from the fact that it had been reformatted for print publication before it went into Best American Comics, because as a result of that process, some of those challenges have already been solved by someone else in terms of how to lay this out so that it fits on a page and so on and so forth. But we have other material in here that has initially appeared online. We have a couple of pages of Hip Hop Family Tree that's been running in its first serialization on Boing Boing. Sam Alden's piece is something that we saw online. Jeff Duncanson's pages, before their appearance in Best American Comics, had only appeared on Tumblr. And there might be one or two more that I'm not thinking about right now. Certainly that's going to be an increasing presence, I think, in the volume moving forward. But one of the challenges is that as more and more people take advantage of the kinds of things that digital platforms can do uniquely, we may face a situation where there's really great work that just can't be effectively presented in a print format, maybe because it has certain features that have to do with scrolling or interactivity or whatever. I don't think we're at the point yet of really having to deal with a lot of those kinds of challenges, but it's something that, you know, a lot of people who work with comics may have to think about in the future.
Yeah. Well, this book, it is quite breathtaking, as it's so comprehensive. There's all the, it runs the gamut. It's intergenerational, and as Scott McCloud points out, he has this wonderfully sectioned off into these interesting themes. He starts off with, great comics are not a genre, and you can just imagine the way he'd say it. I love his zippy way of expressing himself, and of course it makes sense. I mean, if you're just because you're Dan Klaus doesn't mean you're a genre. That's just you're Dan Klaus or you're Charles Burns.
I think the approach that Scott took to the volume, composing the sections that he composed, is really great and unique to this volume of Best American Comics. It's not common for a guest editor to think so thoroughly about the format and the organization of the pieces, even though they always do think about the sequence and which piece is going to follow which other piece and so on. The only other kind of intervention like that that I recall off the top of my head is François Mouly's volume in 2012, which had very specifically a section on kids' comics, but Scott has kind of taken that sectioning approach and applied it across the whole book. And I think the result is, because it's so broad and so well organized, the book does have potential to almost function as a kind of general anthology about comics, even beyond its status as a volume and an annual series.
Oh, sure. Well, everyone who follows comics and people who are casual readers, I'm sure there's a growing readership, a growing anticipation. What's in the latest edition of Best American Comics? I know that must be on your mind. Living up to the anticipation, maybe? Making sure that you cover all the prevailing trends and making sure that you have a nice balance when at the end of the day?
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's something that I think probably anyone working on a book like this, you have to sort of be conscious of that and not conscious of it. in the sense that, on the one hand, like, you know, it's a lot to live up to, calling something a best of anything. It's basically setting yourself up for people to disagree with you. but at the same time, I can't stress enough certainly that everyone involved in this process, myself and Scott or any guest editor, takes it really seriously, is certainly aware. I think we can't not be aware of the fact that putting out anything like this and calling it the best of anything is potentially going to be contentious. But at the end of the day, we all need to be really honest with ourselves and I think true to our sense of critical judgment, because we sign our names to the book and we have to feel confident that these are absolutely the pieces that we can't live without. And you know, even though there's a lot of great stuff that we, you know, maybe couldn't fit into the book, you know, someone else was asking me about making the choices and involved in the book and some of the difficult decisions involved. And I think the truth is there's so much great stuff out there that even if we had 100 more pages in the book, there's still one more story that we would feel bad about not being able to include. And that's just a testament to how much great work is being produced in comics right now.
Well, I know that we could go on for much longer, but I will leave it at that. And I want to thank you for your time. And October is going to be a big month here in Seattle, in anticipating the new Best American Comics 2014. We also have Art Spiegelman. He's on his Wordless tour. Did you want to?
I just want to put in a plug for that.
Yeah.
I saw Wordless here in New York at BAM, and it was tremendous. I highly recommend it to anyone.
Well, you have a long history with Mr. Spiegelman. Would you like to speak a little to that, or what could you tell us about him?
Yeah, well, I mean, I've been very lucky. You know, in the past, I worked on and off for several years in a kind of assistant capacity to Art, and a lot of the I think a lot of the skills that I have to bring to bear to Best American Comics are greatly informed by that experience in many, many different ways, from technical skills involved in book production to just being a really rigorous, thoughtful, and careful editor. I mean, Art is a great example of that, as is François Mouly, who I was also very fortunate to work with. Two of them together as editors of Raw magazine in the 80s and into the early 90s, I think set a real gold standard for editorial integrity in comics.
Oh, certainly. Well, I will just thank you so much for your time, and I look forward to the response to the new edition.
Me too. Thanks again for calling, Henry. It was a real pleasure to talk to you today.
Thank you.